case, and we have more details about the man who is accused of stabbing and seriously injuring a laundromat owner in Abbotsford. This happened as this individual, the accused, was out of prison on several conditions, and these were conditions that were put on him after a case where he stabbed a paraplegic man multiple times, and these details are all contained in some parole board documents. These were documents that were accessed by Global News, talking about 40-year-old Timothy Richard Rowley. He has been charged with assault with a weapon and aggravated assault in this latest incident on August 9th. But we now know he was out of prison on a statutory release. And we wanted to talk more about this and find out how exactly this works and why somebody with this lengthy criminal history would be released. Joining us to talk about that is Rob Danu, a former federal Crown prosecutor, a criminal defense lawyer and co-founder of the Danu Dhaliwal Law Group. Rob Danu, thank you for coming back on the show.
Good to be here, Jill.
When we look at this, and as to be expected, people hear about these details, and the first question for a lot of people is, why would somebody with such a lengthy criminal history be released? And when we talk about statutory release, can you go through this and explain how it works?
Absolutely. And these are the cases that we all hate to see, where we have people getting hurt at the hands of repeat offenders. And that is always the big question, Jill, is, you know, if someone's given a sentence to serve, why aren't they serving that entire sentence? And this is exactly why parole is one of the most controversial and misunderstood aspects of the Canadian justice system. So I think we have to understand what is the purpose of parole first. So the primary purpose of parole is actually to protect the public, ironically. So it's through a gradual and supervised release of individuals back to the community, and they're supposed to be under conditions and under supervision, which is supposed to protect the public. At the same time, they're given resources to rehabilitate them so they are able to stabilize in the community. And we have the system because we know if offenders are released and they serve their entire sentence and they're just let out the side door of a prison, they're going to be unstable. They're more likely to go out there and reoffend. And we know this because the clients I deal with, they don't have a lot of life skills to begin with if they're serving a federal sentence. And jail doesn't give you life skills. In fact, it makes you worse. So if you're let out of jail with no supervision, with no resources, no money, guess what? The first thing you're going to do is probably commit more crime. And Mr. Rowley is a case in point in this. If we look at his background, he is Indigenous. His mother had him at 16. His father dies at 3. His mom couldn't raise him. He's raised by his grandparents. His grandparents separate. There's alcohol and drug abuse in the house. You know, what are we expecting from this individual? He's not going to become a Rhodes Scholar. This is the path he was likely going to take, unfortunately.
One of the things that stuck out to me in the parole documents, and just before I read that statement, I want to play just part of, this is a Kristen Robinson story. She's a reporter at Global News who has been covering this, talking about one of the more recent interactions Timothy Rowley had with police.
Rowley's most recent parole decision states, in May 2019, while intoxicated, you assaulted a man who was being interviewed by police. You attempted to strangle this victim from behind using a shoelace. Rowley was arrested and released. Approximately 9 hours later, the documents state, you entered the residence of a 57-year-old paraplegic man who was watching television.
And that story goes on. He enters the residence. He starts a fire on this man's stove. The gentleman in the wheelchair is then stabbed several times and attacked. Thankfully, another resident in that complex heard the commotion and intervened. So that happened in 2019. We know as well he was given day parole in November of 2022. He was told he had to participate in a residential substance abuse treatment program. He was given a day pass in December of 2022, failed to return to the treatment facility, and was returned to custody 4 days later after being arrested. But then, as we know, he was released. Does any of that go into the decision-making, his being released, his failure to return, when a parole board hearing, when a panel is deciding whether or not he gets another release?
Absolutely, and rightfully so. People should be outraged when they hear about this stuff. And the parole board also, the parole board is comprised of normal human beings. They're also citizens, and they review all of this type of material, and they make a decision as to whether an individual should be released or not. So I'll describe the the parameters of what they're working with. They're somewhat limited in what they can do because statutory release is required by law. So once you serve two-thirds of your sentence, you're required to be released. And the parole board has to impose conditions which minimize risk to the community. And they are dealing with a very high test in terms of actually revoking someone's parole or not allowing someone to have their statutory release. So what we have to take a look at is what is the test that the parole board has to consider. So they have to be satisfied that this individual was an undue risk to society if they were to be released on parole. And they're only allowed to consider very limited criteria. So they have to look at if this individual would be very likely or there's reasonable grounds to believe that they would cause death or serious harm on parole, if they would be involved in a sexual offense involving a child or a serious drug offense. Those are the only three things they can consider. So if we want to take a look at giving more teeth to the parole board, we have to look at expanding the criteria they can consider or lowering the high test that they have to, the threshold they have to pass.
So in this case, he was given several conditions. I think there were eight conditions that included where he had to live and special conditions that not to consume alcohol, not to consume drugs. He had to report any relationships of sexual and non-sexual forms to his parole supervisor. When someone is given those conditions, and like you said, they're put in place to keep the public safe, to keep the public as safe as possible, is there a lot of follow-up? Are people checking to make sure anybody who's released is actually following the conditions?
There is follow-up, but the question is there enough follow-up? So are there enough resources on the ground to prevent similar or any type of offense from occurring? So I would say that there is follow-up, but there's perhaps not enough follow-up. And we're dealing with a system that is bulging at the seams, both in terms of the finances that are available to it and as well as human resources and the expertise. So what we really need to do is we need, and this is the hard part, we need to put more money into this system to help ensure these types of offenses do not reoccur.
Does it change anything that he is now suspected and accused in another attack, a recent attack where a laundromat owner in Abbotsford was stabbed and seriously hurt?
Absolutely. This is a big deal. So the parole board now has, the parole board is going to feel terrible about this because their primary mandate is to protect the public. So when they release someone into the public on conditions that they feel will keep the public safe, and that person goes out and commits a violent crime, that is a huge, huge mess for the parole board to clean up. So when this individual comes back before the parole board, they are going to most definitely consider that he committed a violent offense. But it goes beyond that. We really need to coordinate the different agencies that are involved in the criminal justice system. So the Crown should be looking at this file. The police should be looking at this file. The correction should be looking at this file. And so tomorrow, when he eventually gets out, which he will at some point, the Crown should be looking at whether there should be a long-term sentencing order, or supervision order, I should say, or dangerous offender order for an individual who has a pattern of committing very serious violent offenses.
How rare is it that people are given that designation, the dangerous offender designation?
It used to be quite rare when the legislation first came up. It's far more common now, and we're seeing both long-term supervision orders and dangerous offender orders used far more frequently today.
And is it still the case, if you're designated a dangerous offender, can you be kept in prison? Can you be kept behind bars indefinitely?
You can be kept behind bars indefinitely, but you do still get reviews. I believe it's after 7 years, is my recollection, that you still have a review.
You mentioned, too, these are the types of cases that people get really angry because even though there were a number of conditions, again, that were meant to keep the public safe, here is somebody with a very violent past who is accused again of an extremely violent crime. Not all that comforting to people that even though these checks and balances are in place, something like this can still happen.
No, it shouldn't be comforting because it did happen and now we're dealing with it and we have real people who are now suffering. So what we really need to do, and I stress this over and over, is we need to look at the root cause of these individuals. So we have this individual's history. He has a terrible history. You know, we raise our kids and we hope in the best of circumstances they'll turn out okay. So here we have a case where Humpty Dumpty has fallen off the wall already. It's a lot easier to be proactive and identify that this child way back when was at risk and we should have intervened at that stage. But that requires resources, it requires planning, it requires expertise, all things that our government is not necessarily great at.
Rob Danu, we'll leave it there for today. Thank you for coming on the show and talking about this. Appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.
That is Rob Danu, a former federal Crown prosecutor and criminal defense lawyer, co-founder of Danu Dhaliwal Law Group. Let me know your thoughts on this. It is an absolutely heartbreaking story when you look at the pain and suffering that has been inflicted on numerous people. And this is an individual, Timothy Rowley, who has been convicted of many of these crimes. In one case, he pleaded guilty to a number of offenses. They were offenses including break and enter, commit assault, assault with a weapon, aggravated assault. And as Rob mentioned, the parole documents also do go into his history, and a very troubling upbringing and a lot of substance abuse. And you're absolutely right. Would intervention have made things so much different in this case? Would they have helped this individual so he didn't go down that path? Well, let me know your